There aren't a lot of countries that allow fishermen to operate out in the open ocean, well beyond domestic borders and domestic rules, but the handful who do end up capturing almost 70% of the total open ocean catch. The rest is caught by fishing fleets who are skirting the often muddy rules. They're catching big migratory fish like tuna. They also target deep sea stocks that straddle the boundaries between the open ocean and national borders. According to a group of fisheries experts in the U.S., Canada, and Australia, that practice should end. Rashid Sumaila is a fisheries economist at the University of BC. He says the problem is that in open ocean fishing, no one's really in charge.
Relatively, the management of these oceans is much, much weaker than in coastal waters, in exclusive economic zones of countries, mainly because you don't just get into Canadian waters to fish. You have to have a license, or somebody will check you out. Open ocean, we don't have that. So that's one thing. And the fish that live in the open ocean, many of them also spend time in the coastal waters. So if they are mismanaged out there, we see impacts on our fishes within our exclusive economic zones.
And that means the catches of local fishermen, the ones who operate small fishing boats and maintain regional markets, are the ones who ultimately suffer. As ocean fish are depleted, the massive, well-funded ocean-going fleets can make up the difference simply by finding new locations or adding boats. Local operations can't. So as fish populations decline, so do opportunities for the very people who aren't necessarily the cause of the problem. So what to do? According to Rashid Sumaila and his colleagues, the best answer is to outright ban open ocean fishing. He says the result would be a sort of fish bank, which could be left untouched and only harvested around the fringes within countries' fishing boundaries. Sumaila has presented his idea to the United Nations.
So what I see when I give talks at the UN about this, there's a lot of interest from many countries, especially less developed ones. And they are one group that will benefit from a closure, because then they will get the fish when they come into their waters, and they need the food and the protein and so on. So there's a lot of interest, African countries, Caribbean countries, small island developing countries.
But in a world barreling towards a population of 8 billion, some have argued that we need all that fish. It provides much-needed protein to an ever-hungrier world. Per capita seafood consumption went from around 10 kilos per year in the 1960s to nearly 20 now. That's thanks in part to ever more affluent populations, particularly in seafood-hungry Asia. In the face of all that demand, wouldn't closing off a massive swath of water cause massive shortfalls in food?
The good thing about this solution is that actually it doesn't take away fish. We end up having more fish to catch. Why? And that's why I said in the paper we published that we should make the high seas the fish bank of the world, because the fish then get to hide away in the high seas. They grow bigger. They get to mature. They lay more eggs. They give us more larvae that then float into the exclusive economic zones, which are better managed. So actually, all our calculations show that we'll get more fish, and we'll get more dollars. Meanwhile, we have the biodiversity also improving. It's amazing, actually, when we did the calculations and the modeling.
So who loses out? Big fishing operations who exclusively run open ocean fleets, obviously. But Sumaila says as developing nations see benefits, a handful of countries could feel a loss. Among them, Taiwan, Korea, Japan, and the European Union are viewed as the biggest offenders when it comes to allowing high seas fisheries. And Sumaila predicts it's those countries who will remain the biggest hurdles at the United Nations. For CBC Radio, I'm Khalil Akhtar.